The question was asked, how do we see the application of Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tzelem? The Mishnah tells us God loves humanity. He created humanity in his form. And yet, we find in the Torah, mitzvah to annihilate Amalek. We find Yoshua killing the kings of Israel, tens of kings of Israel and their people. We find throughout the book of Kings all kinds of wars. How are we to understand this? So, I think that, like many questions in Tanakh, if we take a broader look and we understand a broader perspective on what happened, we can answer many of the questions. I didn't say we'll answer all of them. Some of the questions, I believe, cannot be answered until you know much, much more about Torah. And I defer dealing with them to a later date. I think that some answers, if one hears them before one has learned a lot, then one shouldn't accept them. I think that just because the answer might have truth to it, one who is beginning in learning Torah cannot possibly accept it unless he stops using his mind, and I don't want you to stop using your mind. So that's why some of the questions I cannot answer at this stage of your Torah learning, and I will share with you that when I was a youngster, these questions bothered me, and about some of them, I felt like the answers I was given came from people who hadn't thought about it and were just repeating what they were taught, and I couldn't respect it, and it took me decades to be able to actually understand and connect with the answer that was given. And I rather you think about it, mull it over, be bothered by it, and then when you'll get there, Bezachem, you'll get there. And it's legitimate to be bothered. But I think that if we look at the broader picture, we will see that on a broad scale, most of the questions have answers. And even the ones we think that they don't have answers, I think that in due time, we will understand the answer. So let's begin. We have to know that the Torah teaches us that ethically, a person is supposed to protect their own life, and if someone's trying to kill you, kill them first. And that's a given. The Torah assumes that's given, that's logic. And that should answer situations where enemy nations try to attack us. The four kings fight the five kings. We have on tradition they were headed to take down Avraham Avinu, and he preempted them. And then he goes and kills all of them. So that's a basic precept. You have to understand that in Torah, ethics, the Torah takes for granted, someone's coming to kill you, you get up an hour earlier and kill him. That's an assumption. And that answers many of our wars in Jewish history. We continue. We enter the land of Israel. So, at first glance, Joshua is killing out so many nations. On deeper reflection, you see that we sent them letters. We offered them, do you want to make peace? All you have to do is accept the Noahide laws. You have to lead moral lives. We're willing to let you stay as citizens. You can leave. You don't have to fight. God told us to take the land of Israel. You have the option of leaving. If you choose to stay and fight, well, then we're going to fight to the finish.
Is it the Rambam saying
that? I don't remember. It's a Gemara. It's a Pasuk.
I read something like this in the Gemara, like the three letters to
something. Right. So the Gemara is going based on the Pasuk. Before we go to war, before we enter the land of Israel, Joshua sends letters and the nations have an option. One nation, the Girgashi, flees southward, goes down to Africa. The other nations choose to fight. One nation chooses to try and con us into making a peace treaty with them. They're not going with the other nations. They can't convince the other nations. They are fearful of the other nations, and they cannot make peace with us. So they try to con us into a peace treaty. And then the other nations try to kill them, and we protect them. We risk our own soldiers. We go out to protect them after a deal that they conned us into. They lied. And nonetheless, we stand by our word and we go and protect them. A few centuries later, after they conned us into a deal, there is a sinful act where King Saul's men kill out all the priests of the city of Nob. And because of that, six members of the family of the Givonim, of this nation that conned us into accepting them, also die. And then the Givonim won't forgive Israel, and there's a drought, and King David begs them, forgive us, and they say, no, we won't. And King David says, I'll offer you money, I'll offer you land, I'll offer you whatever you want. And he interviews each and every one, and everyone says, no, we want blood. So they hang children from King Saul's family, relatives of King David. King David was married into the family, because God says, until you appease them, until you forgive them, until you gain their forgiveness, there will not be rain in the country. Okay? That's pretty exceptional treatment for a non-Jew who conned us into making a peace treaty with them. Pretty impressive. You continue in the Tanakh. King David goes to war. When does he go to his fantastic war against Ammon? After he sends words of peace and comfort to the Ammonite king and tells him, I want to comfort you over the loss of your father. And the Ammonite king hears from his advisors, you think King David wants peace with you? They were all sent here to spy. So they cut off half their clothing and they send them back half naked with half their heads shaved and half their beards shaved. And they realize it's an act of war. And then they call in other forces from all around Israel to join them in having a phenomenal central war, a war that was the greatest war of its time. And that's where you find King David going to war. And the nations all unite to join, to annihilate us. And there was a danger of annihilation. And when King David ends that war, he wants to ensure that they will never again consider doing such a thing. Think about it. All our neighbors joined forces. We were attacked from multiple sides. We were outnumbered and we were in tremendous danger. So then you find that what King David does is he does a form of selection, arbitrary selection, who will live and who will die in order to instill fear in his enemies. So yes, he did that when they were threatening to kill all of us. You find that King David had his whole family kidnapped by the Amalekites. Then he goes out to war against the Amalekites. En route to the war, he meets an Egyptian slave who was left to die. He takes him in. He feeds him. He gives him good food and cures him. That's the way you treat a Gentile, a non-Jew? Yes. King David is the first king in world history to bury the dead of the enemy. All around the world they were talking. We find that the Egyptians, the Babylonians, all around the world, they'd leave corpses lying all across the military field. King David doesn't do that. Every war he goes to, he has his men come back after the war and bury all the dead. Respect for the human body, respect for human dignity. And there are multiple examples. The more you look at the broader picture, the more you'll see that the concept pervades. You look at the book of Jonah. The people of Nineveh were sinful. The people of Nineveh were headed to cause the greatest Holocaust in Jewish history. We lost over 11 million people at that time. And yet, God says, I can't just wipe them out. Why? Because they're human beings. They don't have the greatest merits. And they're about to do something terrible to the Jewish people. And in history, we find later on, in the prophet Nahum, if I'm not mistaken, that they returned to their ways. And ultimately, they were punished. But at that time, they showed remorse. And at the end of the day, they were human beings. And that is the final message of the book of Jonah. God says, I'm not just going to kill out humanity. No. Humanity is precious to me. So we have to take each question and analyze it. But if you look at the broader picture, most of the time, you'll see the answer from the broader picture. Some of the time, it'll deserve learning much, much more. And don't buy into everything you hear so fast. Because that sometimes that means you stopped using your head. It's better you live with the question and say, you know what, I don't understand everything yet, and in due time I will understand. But I have questions, and I'm not giving up on my questions. And if you think what I'm telling you sounds heretical, the Rambam writes it. In his introduction to the 10th chapter of Sanhedrin, the Rambam writes, there are certain questions that you'll have when you study our sages. And some people will tell you, well, the sages said it, take it, that's it. And the Rambam says, no, no. Intelligence dictates that you don't just buy it. If you have questions, you say, but I don't understand. So you could say, they knew what they were talking about, but I don't know what they were talking about. I respect them, I don't mock them, but I remain with my question. I remain intellectually honest. And I say, in due time, I will understand, or I won't understand. I have respect for them, they've proven themselves, they're not a bunch of fools, but stemming from that respect is also the idea that I can't accept something that doesn't seem logical to me. So I respect them and I assume they knew what they were talking about, but I'm also intellectually honest, and I say, but I don't understand them. And I'm telling you that my experience has been that in due time, many of the things do fall into place.